everyone. It's Christina Herrick, produce editor with the Packer, here again with another Tip of the Iceberg podcast, this time sponsored by AgroFresh. In this episode, I will talk with Beth Mitchum, professor of cooperative extension and emeritus director of the Post-Harvest Technology Center. But first, I'm joined by Amy Tranzillo, global marketing director for AgroFresh. Thanks for joining me, Amy.
Great. Thank you, Christina.
So, AgroFresh has been in the news lately, Amy, with the partnership with Pace. So talk to me about how that expands offerings, share with our readers, listeners, viewers, what that's going to mean for them, all that good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having us. And AgroFresh is a leading what we call post-harvest solutions provider. So we actually help our growers, packers, shippers, and even up through the retail ensure that their produce gets to where it needs to be and the highest quality is stored at the best quality metrics, and then also reduces food waste. So we're really excited to be on the podcast today. And we do have some news. So we've gone through a couple of different acquisitions over the last, let's say, 6 to 8 months. Most recently, we were able to partner and acquire a company called Pace International, who's also been a leading provider in this space as well. And what that really has allowed us to do is really underscore our ability to serve our customers in a new and different way with a more full portfolio of options. So if we think about how this, all the different types of produce you see here in my background, I have oranges and apples and blueberries. There's all of these different pieces of fruit have different needs as they move from the field all the way to the retail shelf. And as they get go through the packing process and get washed and cleaned and stored, there's a number of different points at which that fruit can be at risk for, quality or decay, a number of different things. So when we have acquired this company, Pace International, it really enables us to offer more options to our customers and really allow us to solve and provide solutions at every step of the way of that supply chain as that piece of fruit moves from the field all the way to the retail shelf.
So you kind of mentioned storage, and one thing I've known AgroFresh for through my time in the produce industry. So I was in the produce industry for a while, left, came back. So I'm well aware of AgroFresh's offerings, but one that I've always known AgroFresh for is SmartFresh. So there was a big anniversary for SmartFresh. What kind of impact has SmartFresh had on the fresh produce industry?
Yeah, and thank you. We're pretty proud of that that technology. We've celebrated just last year 20 years in the marketplace. That was definitely we started out in apples to really allow those apples to be stored at the highest quality and really manage ethylene. So it's a produce podcast, so we can get a little bit into the details. So all apples, pears, a number of different products actually ripen through the process of inhalation and exhalation of ethylene. And SmartFresh really came to the market to help with that process and slow down the ripening and really allow apples to be stored year round. So it revolutionized the apple industry, not only here in the US, but globally. We're present with that product and now working in a number of different crops across 50 countries. And we've just celebrated the 20-year anniversary here in the United States. And we're actually celebrating around the world in Australia, New Zealand, China, and some of the Latin America markets this year. So it's been a game changer in the apple industry, and it certainly is also making its way into some of the other crops because, again, all of these crops, they ripen. So if we could keep that quality, right, that fresh picked quality, then that's exactly what we want to do with our technology. So really proud of that, and happy that we were the pioneers in that space.
Yeah, and speaking of fresh picked quality, harvest I know is a few months away. However, I think it's coming faster and faster. another product that I always think of when I think of AgroFresh is Harvista. Yeah. So what are some of the benefits growers see in using Harvista?
Yeah, and this is, I mean, this has been an amazing opportunity for us to take the Smart Fresh technology, which is a basis of a molecule called 1-MCP. And actually, with our scientists, we actually reformulated that so that we can have a field application. So the earlier we can get that ethylene management to start in the field, the better the quality of piece of fruit. And we have approval in that and usage in cherries, apples, pears, as well as blueberries. So it is blueberry season now. So one of the things that Harvista does for blueberries, when you spray it and apply it in the field, is actually, again, work on that ethylene management process of the blueberry itself. But it allows for that blueberry to get have just a little bit more firmness, higher quality. And as a result, as we sort of have been talking to a lot of our customers and people out actually down in the southeast part of the U.S., you know, they're seeing some challenges with either labor or other things, and they're switching from hand harvest to machine harvest. So once you have a firmer berry as a result of using a technology like Harvista, that's critical when you're going into mechanical harvesting to ensure that that berry is as firm as it can be. And that firmness really leads to quality, again, all the way out to the retail shelf.
Yeah, well, you know, thank you so much for, you know, joining me to kind of give us a little snapshot of AgroFresh. And I'm really excited to have the conversation with Dr. Mitchum as well to kind of learn a little bit more about post-harvest solutions and a little bit of maybe even how AgroFresh's products impact post-harvest.
Yeah, absolutely. We're excited. I mean, I think, Christina, the whole post-harvest space in general, it's still nascent, right? I mean, I think that these products have been used for a number of different years, but there's also a number of different crops out there that are still not using these products to the in the post-harvest space from our company or any company to the fullest extent. And so as produce is traveling longer and longer distances and sitting in distribution warehouses longer than one would like, it's really, there's an opportunity for us to leverage and use these post-harvest products.
Thank you so much for joining me, Dr. Mitchum. You know, when we were talking before we hit record, I'd mentioned, you know, I'd worked with you in the past for a previous role. And so it was really exciting. This is literally the first time I've had a chance to meet you. So I'm really looking forward to having this conversation and finally getting a chance to meet you virtually, as it would be.
Well, thank you so much. Really appreciate the invitation and looking forward to the discussion as well.
Yeah, so let's talk about some of the post-harvest challenges for produce growers. And, you know, I'm assuming some of that might vary based on commodity. So what are some of those challenges that growers face?
Yeah, I think the challenges do vary by commodity. But I think the biggest challenge is delivering good tasting quality produce that still has a good shelf life. I think that's one of the biggest challenges because there's so many factors that can affect that. And some of those, you know, the good flavor and the good shelf life sometimes are in conflict, and it's hard to get them both together and to do it consistently so that produce can compete with other products that have consistent taste and quality. And it's challenging because the weather changes, the seasons change, you have different varieties coming in and out of production, and they have different characteristics. And then, of course, there's all the handling after harvest. So that's, I think, the biggest challenge.
And I would assume, based on everything you just laid out, that also makes it really hard for you as a researcher. So, you know, explain some of that, because, you know, I know growers realize that you're working as hard as you can, and you can't just magically snap your fingers and create a one size fits all solution. But, you know, what are some of those challenges to post-harvest research?
Yeah, well, as a post-harvest researcher, one of the challenges is trying to make sure that what you're studying is going to be applicable in the commercial sense. So, you know, either trying to mimic commercial conditions so that the results are valid and will carry forward when they start being used commercially. Of course, you have to always think about all the limitations that growers and packer shippers have to deal with, and the fact that it's such a fast-paced industry and whatnot. But so sometimes we do our research with embedded within commercial practices, and that can be a real exciting way to do the research. But of course, it comes with challenges because you're working in the midst of someone's business operations, so you don't want to interfere with things too much, or you want to keep your collaborator happy, but at the same time, you're trying to control things to some extent so you can get results. So it's usually pretty challenging. It can be very useful, but it's challenging to control things. And I think every post-harvest researcher, probably every researcher that's collaborated with industry has lost their results for one reason or another. The product gets shipped out or, something happens to it. So that's a challenge, but it's, one that we're used to dealing with. Another is, just to say, I think research for post-harvest is quite a bit less than production research, breeding studies. There's a lot less funding that goes into the post-harvest field. I think even less now than there used to be. And so as a result, there's a lot less people who do this kind of work, particularly at universities and USDA. There's been a decrease in the number of people focusing on that. So we see that a lot of companies have their own researchers and they work on developing various services and products for the industry. And so it's more of a collaborative effort these days because there's less people at the university doing it.
Yeah, that's interesting. As you were talking, I'm thinking about just some of the challenges. As you kind of alluded to, you almost have to work, quote unquote, in the field. I know it's not in the literal field, but in the field, just because, the conditions in a lab are probably very different than any of the packing facilities and post-harvest facilities that you'd be, the produce would actually be in. You have to get the conditions right.
Some of our studies, we've had to do things like, simulate changes in temperature, when you might package a product and cool it, and then it's going to market. So it's not going to stay at the same temperature from that point till it gets to the market. So we've had to try to, sometimes in the laboratory, simulate, exposure to warm temperatures that's going to cause potentially some warming or some condensation. So trying to simulate things. In the past, we've actually had vibration tables where we used to vibrate things to simulate truck shipment. Of course, nowadays everyone has air rides, so we don't need that so much. But so there's some effort that goes into trying to simulate it when we need to.
Yeah, well, and that's obviously in the packing facility, the produce is probably going to be handled the best it may be handled, and a consumer doesn't necessarily handle a piece of fruit the way that they should, or unfortunately some people working in the produce departments may not also handle things the best. So you want to, if you're working on post-harvest solutions, as you kind of alluded to, you want to replicate all of the situations that the produce might find itself in order to then be able to work on delivering that quality piece of fruit or produce.
Yeah, one of the most interesting studies I worked on was funded by a big USDA grant, and I actually partnered with the University of Florida, and we set up shipments here in California and then shipped them to a retailer in Florida. And then our colleagues from the University of Florida went there and evaluated the product as it arrived at the wholesale facility. And then it went all the way to retail as well. So that was actually a nice study, and having that collaboration with East Coast, West Coast worked out really well.
Yeah, it's interesting. When I found out I was going to get the chance to talk with you, I was really excited because you've been a part of post-harvest research for a while and you've made a significant impact. It was almost like I had this chance to talk to you about some of the changes and some of the evolution, and just I'd love to hear kind of like how post-harvest research has changed, what what kind of solutions have you seen introduced and kind of the impact of some of your research then on the produce community?
Yeah, well, it's been interesting over my career to see how things have shifted. In the beginning years, you know, the emphasis, I think, both commercially in the industry, but also in research, was trying to extend the storage life and the post-harvest life as long as possible. So we did a lot of studies on controlled atmosphere storage and modified atmosphere packaging and different ways of controlling diseases and decay. And it was all focused on keeping the product in good condition as long as possible. And, you know, there were a lot of and temperature management, really good cooling and all of that. And you know, not myself, but former colleagues or people before me, you know, really developed forced air cooling and that really revolutionized the industry and their ability to get things from the West Coast to the East Coast in good condition and really facilitated all that marketing. But over time, things have shifted, and I think consumers and what they want has shifted, but their expectations have increased. And consumers want a product that has good flavor. They also want, you know, safe and nutritious, but flavor has become really important. And so the research community has shifted as well. And we see a lot more research looking at, you know, comparing varieties or breeding for good flavor as compared to just breeding for shelf life and production yields. We see research looking at like how does low temperature affect flavor, and we know now for some products, if we keep them, you know, too low of a temperature, we're actually reducing the amount of flavor quality that they have. Things like tomatoes, as an example.
And
we've seen that in a number of commodities. There's more and more research on that, and so people are starting to look at, well, how can we extend the flavor life of these products so that we can deliver good flavor quality to consumers? So that's one shift I've seen. Certainly when I started my career, produce safety was not, microbial safety was not really on anyone's radar. And that, you know, came in and kind of quickly built into, you know, this huge research need and this, you know, huge challenge for the industry to figure out how to address these issues and protect themselves as business people, but also protect consumers. And so that's developed into a huge field. That's another big change that I've seen.
Yeah, that's really interesting. You know, I would agree with you in just the shift I've seen in my career, you know, in terms of flavor. That's definitely the big thing that's all new produce offerings are really talking about flavor. So that's interesting that you've kind of seen that shift too. And I know you mentioned, you know, that maybe storage isn't necessarily the number one focus, but it's obviously still a focus. And part of the reason that we're having this conversation is obviously that you've done some research with Smart Fresh. And, you know, I'd love to hear kind of what your research has been on with Smart Fresh and kind of how you've seen it impact the produce industry.
Yeah. Actually, it was during my career that one MCP was discovered and commercialized as a product, first for flowers and then for produce. And, you know, AgriFresh worked very, very closely with the post-harvest research community in testing the product on a wide variety of produce items and different varieties of apples, for example. And they funded a huge amount of research and worked in close partnership with a lot of research around across the United States, but also in Canada. And I was one of those people who worked closely with them. And it was an exciting time because, you know, researchers love a challenge and, you know, we were able to do a lot of really good work. Of course, they provided the funding, which was, you know, essential and really helpful. So a lot of work looking at like how best to apply it, you know, what's the dose, what's the timing, what are the conditions that work best. There was a lot to figure out, to figure out how best to use it. And I think that work is still ongoing. I think, you know, the biggest, you know, success has been with the Apple industry, where I mean, I think SmartFresh has just revolutionized the Apple industry in combination with Harvista, the pre-harvest product. Where mealy apples, you know, unless you're buying organic fruit, which unfortunately can't use the product, the other apples, you don't run across mealy apples anymore. And that was always a challenge. So it's really, it's a perfect fit for apples. I've done a lot of work on, I did quite a bit on apples, but I've also done work on pears and persimmons and even strawberries. And, you know, it's, they're continuing to grow the product base and study new products. It, of course, with some products, it's a little more challenging because unlike apples, where they stay firm, they don't need to soften. Other products, we need, it needs a more nuanced approach. And so I did a lot of work with pears in particular, looking at what's the best dose to kind of get the benefits, but also allow the fruit to ripen.
Interesting.
And we also looked at how ethylene in the atmosphere affected the effectiveness of the SmartFresh treatment. And so, and again, a lot of that was in collaboration with some of the scientists at AgriFresh who were also doing their own research.
Yeah.
And we sort of worked in concert. So I think it's a product that has a lot of growth left, you know, to figure out how it can fit best with a wider range of products. And I think probably continued research and working with someone who understands the nuances of how it can best be used for a particular product is probably advisable.
Yeah. So I'm just kind of curious, how did the SmartFresh research come about? Did it come, did you hear about it from word of mouth from a grower? Did you hear like rumblings or like how did it find its way to you?
Yeah, interesting. Well, we have this post-harvest group called, well, it's a collaborative research group, and it's funded by USDA. They have these groups that focus on certain topics, and ours is post-harvest physiology of fruit. And I've been part of that group since I started my career. I won't say how many years ago, but quite some time ago. And that group, a couple of the members were the first ones who were contacted by AgriFresh. And then, you know, we talked about it in our annual meeting. And then, you know, more and more people were brought into the fold, so to speak, and asked to do research on products in their area. Because it is true that, you know, especially even if you just look at apples grown in California were quite different from apples grown in New York or even Michigan. So people were working on how to apply SmartFresh to different varieties, but also apples and grown in different parts of the country and really dialing it in.
That's really interesting. And it makes sense. I mean, just given the growing season, the different conditions that apples face. So the apple that's picked in Michigan had an entirely different growing season than the apple picked at California.
Right.
And then, you know, as you mentioned, not even getting into the nitty gritty of the different varieties and how they would respond.
And yeah,
there's a lot.
Apples are stored the longest of
any
product we store, pretty much, except maybe nuts. And, you know, so there's a lot that can go wrong in that length of time. So you have to, you know, you got to go into storage in the best condition possible.
Absolutely. I mean, as soon as you said that, I was thinking of Honeycrisp, which everyone knows has its own set of complications to storage. So yeah, that's really interesting. You know, as you were talking before, you kind of alluded to consumer preferences. I don't want to say changing, but evolving. You know, the focus is obviously different. So, you know, I think it's a really interesting conversation to have, kind of this conversation about consumer demands, but then also kind of include in there, you know, sustainability, safety, quality. You know, everyone wants the most perfect piece of produce they could possibly get in the most sustainably grown and stored way, and what do you see as like some of the trade-offs to the goals of like sustainability, quality, everything that everyone wants, but then delivering it in a way that obviously doesn't break the bank and is something that a grower or a packer could, execute, I guess you could say.
Yeah, this is a huge challenge. Really a huge challenge. I feel for businesses in the produce sector that are having to balance all of this. And yeah, consumers and regulators too are pretty demanding, and they want all these different things, but I think they don't think about the fact that they don't always work in concert. Sometimes they're in direct conflict with each other. A good example, there's quality and safety, produce safety often goes hand in hand. We do see a lot of synergy there where, like, for example, water sanitation is going to be good for produce quality and preservation as well as food safety. Packaging also often goes hand in hand with safety and quality. But when you look at quality and sustainability, there can be some challenges. So in recent years, we're seeing a lot of countries and states reduce or eliminate the use of plastic packaging.
Yes.
And it's a huge challenge for the industry. Because plastic has played such a key role in the post-harvest handling. I mean, even if you just take away from the fact that it's clear and you can see through it, and it's a great way to give stuff to consumers so they can easily take it home, and there's the safety element of protecting it from contamination when it's packaged like that. But also, plastics inhibit water loss, and they keep the humidity around the product high, so they help to reduce the loss of water from harvest till it gets consumed. So that's a big issue. And then of course there's the modified atmosphere packaging that we like to use, and that I don't know of any way of doing that without plastic. I don't know that we have one. And interesting story. So I was shopping at my local retail market, and they had a different kind of plastic produce bag in the produce department to put your produce in. So I didn't think too much of it. It had a very different feel, but I didn't really think much about it. And I got some lettuce, some romaine, took it home, popped it in the refrigerator, and I think I didn't have space in the produce bin because I bought too much, so I put it somewhere else. So a few days later, I was getting ready to make dinner, and I pulled it out, and the lettuce was so wilted. I've never seen anything in my life like that. The outer leaves were just shriveled up, like stuck to themselves, and just completely, and the rest of it was very limp, and I was initially shocked, and then I realized, this is a different bag. So then I looked closer at it and realized it was a compostable bag. There has been a little bit of research looking at compostable bags, and thus far I don't know if anyone's identified one that is a good barrier to moisture vapor, so they don't reduce water loss. So, and then I asked some questions, and I found out that California recently banned these plastic produce bags. And so the stores are having to shift over. So that's a case where that's being done for sustainability, but it may lead to an increase in produce loss and waste.
Yeah.
And certainly. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out, whether there's any consumer concern about that, or people even recognize what's going on. I mean, I feel kind of silly as a post-harvest expert that I didn't really look more closely at the bag when I brought it home, but I was quite surprised.
Well, I guess it's an interesting lesson in that, it unfortunately seems to happen where there's some of these rules and regulations that are made with with what seems like a good end goal in mind. Obviously, everyone wants to increase their sustainability. Everyone wants to, you know, do what they can, but not necessarily understanding all of the implications. You know, clearly no one did a test on those bags before the ban happened to make sure they would be as effective or similar, you know, even if it's not 100% perfect, similar to the bags before. That's really interesting. And yeah, that's definitely a challenge. I think that you're right, that the industry is going to have to focus on, you know, if it ends up being that plastics are out of the equation, you know, does that impact breeding? Does that impact more post-harvest research? As you kind of alluded to, there might be some challenges with that, but
and we were talking,
I guess, about job isn't done, which is good, you know. the everyone will need post-harvest research.
Well, definitely. Sorry. Yeah, this whole issue of finding an alternative for plastic, for single use, you know, non-compostable plastic, is a big issue, and there is a lot of research being done, but probably not enough yet, and it is a big challenge, you know. Yeah. I mentioned before, you know, that modified atmosphere packaging depends on that. And, you know, we use modified atmosphere packaging to extend the shelf life of a lot of products. I mean, think about your cut lettuces. We use a low oxygen environment to keep them from turning pinkish color or brown. And, you know, so it's possible that maybe Smart Fresh could fill the void on some of those challenges where it's related to ethylene. Or you could extend shelf life by inhibiting, you know, ripening with something like Smart Fresh. If you're not able to use modified atmosphere, maybe that's going to be able to fill some of the void. But there's, I'm not sure we'll be able to fill every gap. So there's definitely some research that needs to be done.
Well, that's interesting. So you kind of talked about flavor before, and quality. So, you know, What can the industry do to, you know, we kind of set up that there are some odds stacked against the produce industry. But, you know, thinking about that and thinking about that the consumer has no idea any of this is going on. And I don't want to say doesn't care, because I do think there are consumers that care. But, you know, how can the industry kind of, what strategies can the industry use to deliver quality and flavor to consumers?
All right. Well, I think it's a multitasking approach. I think one of the tools is to really look at the varieties that you're choosing to grow and think about and look at, hopefully there's some data available on the potential flavor quality that those products can develop. An example I'm familiar with is in the strawberry area, there are a lot of different varieties, and some of those varieties, even grown under the ideal conditions, won't develop as much sugar in the fruit as other varieties. There's just a, you know, all grown under the same conditions, some will develop higher sugar content than others, and sugar is very tightly linked to flavor in strawberry. So, you know, that's just one example, but there's a million of them. So trying to, you know, find those varieties that have the flavor potential and hopefully have the other characteristics that you need as well. And then we want to harvest them at the best time. And that, of course, varies with the product, but hopefully there's been some research done on your product. There is a lot of research out there, and but knowing and trying to achieve that harvest at the optimal time, not too mature, but not immature. And then good temperature management. I mean, even though we know that temperature can inhibit flavor, so when we say good temperature management, it doesn't necessarily mean the lowest possible temperature, but the best temperature for the product you're dealing with, which it does vary from product to product. Packaging, I think, is key, because not only because it can protect the product from physical damage and, you know, contamination, but it prevents water loss, hopefully. if it's plastic, and it can extend shelf life if it's modified atmospheres. And then I think these are kind of the basics, but then we want to augment that with special treatments, things like the Harvista or the Smart Fresh, that can allow you to, Harvista can allow you to harvest your product at a bigger size, maybe even a little more mature, knowing that it's not going to ripen so quickly. Or you can extend the storage life and the quality life of the fruit in storage. And on things like green vegetables and other products, you know, Smart Fresh can inhibit those negative effects of ethylene. So those sorts of things can help to extend the life of the product. Yeah, so those would be my key recommendations. They're not easy to do. And it's a lot of different areas, but I think if you know, you know, kind of what the goals are, you can see how many of those you can fit into your operational activities.
Yeah, and I as you were talking, I was thinking, so, you know, some of those do seem like they would be a bit of a challenge to pull off, but, you know, I think the way that you phrase that into seeing, you know, see what works for your operation and kind of see what you have is a great way to look at the challenges and see what you're doing and see where there's room for improvement and kind of blend those two together. You know, we already kind of talked about this, but I'd love to go a little bit deeper into it. You know, when I have someone who has some experience in an industry on a call, I always love to talk about the future. And I know it's almost impossible to predict where things are going. Obviously, I know AI is probably going to factor into post-harvest research in the future. And that's changing so rapidly, it's almost impossible to predict where that's going. But, you know, what else? What's next? Like, where do you see the future heading for both post-harvest research and just post-harvest technology?
Well, I think there's a good number of challenges right now that are going to be a big part of the future research, you know, figuring out alternative packaging and how to blend all these different demands into something that's feasible and works for everybody. One area that has been developing but slowly is this whole area of monitoring and predicting shelf life, or maybe it could be even flavor life. There are tools out there for monitoring, but you know, they're only used during certain parts of the value chain, not others. And you know, the data that's collected, there's some models and whatnot, but I think with AI we could probably do much more with that. I think that's certainly an area that I think is going to grow, and I think offers some value for the industry as a whole. Probably we'll see continued development of various nanotechnology products, you know, improved sanitizers or pest management tools that are relying on nanotechnology. I hope we're going to see more focused on how to deliver better tropical products to the marketplace. I think that's an area that needs more attention. These are products that are chilling sensitive because they are from tropical origins, things like mangoes and papayas, as an example, that have a, you know, they have a shorter shelf life to start with, but it's shortened because they can't be stored at really low temperature. So yeah, you need to store them at higher than 50 degrees Fahrenheit. And so that's not going to slow down ripening very well or to control diseases very well. So things like Smart Fresh could be helpful here to inhibit the effects of ethylene and slow down the ripening. Some more novel ways of controlling pathogens is probably also going to be factoring in, because there seems to be increasing interest in having less pesticides on products. So I think that's probably not going to reverse itself. And so different strategies for keeping the fruit healthier and more resistant to pathogens, but also controlling the pathogens themselves will hopefully be part of what we see in the future.
Is there anything else you want to share that I didn't ask about?
We did the Post-Harvest Technology Center did a workshop a couple years ago called Emerging Technologies for the Produce Industry. And one of the panels focused on plastic packaging and alternatives to packaging. And, you know, we talked about the regulations coming and some of the research, but really came away with, we have a lot of work to do because there really weren't any viable solutions at that time. Hopefully some things are happening now that I'm not fully aware of that are, you know, we need to get some material scientists and others to work together with physiologists to come up with a good solution.
Yeah, well, there's nothing like actual bands to really tip the hand of research quickly. And, you know, obviously what's going on in Canada is only going to reverberate down. So, you're right. I hope there are researchers out there that are doing work, and I'm sure there are. And just kind of hope that those solutions come soon. So thank you again, Dr. Mitchum, for joining me today. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you and kind of seeing where post-harvest research is and where it's going to go. It's just been an absolute pleasure having you.
Thank you so much. It was my pleasure. I enjoyed the conversation.
Absolutely. I also want to say a big thank you to AgroFresh for sponsoring this podcast. And thank you to the listeners and readers and viewers for tuning in. And don't forget, if you like what you hear, you can catch new episodes of Tip the Iceberg on your favorite podcast platform like Google Play, Spotify, Apple, and more. And that's a wrap for this edition of Tip of the Iceberg, brought to you by The Packer, Produce Market Guide, Farm Journal, and AgroFresh. Join us again for more industry insights. Bye.